Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. I am Team Ready Sai's Bishu, and along with me is Sai Prakash, the co-host of this program. And today we move on from where we left last time. We are discussing the 16th chapter of Prema Vahini. We discussed the fourth segment in the previous session, and today with prayers at Bhagwan's lotus feet and with seeking his blessings to help us spend the rest 1 hour contemplating on his message and how to make our lives his message. Let's begin this session. So let me play for you the fifth segment of chapter 16. This is a slightly longer segment, and after that we will begin the discussion.
నీట మునిగిపోవానికి ఏ చిన్న పుల్ల అయినను ఆధారమగును. అట్లే సంసార సాగరమున మునిగిన వారికి ఏ కొంచెము మంచిగా మాట్లాడినను అదే జీవితమునకు ఆధారం కావచ్చును. చేసిన మేలు వ్యర్థం కాదు, చేసిన కీడు కూడా వృథాపోదు. కనుక లేశమాత్రము కూడా చెడ్డ సంస్కారము కలుగనీయక కనులు పవిత్రములై ఉండునట్లు చెవులు నిందావాక్యములను వినక సాధ్యమైనంతవరకు భగవద్వాక్యములు సద్విషయాలు వినుచుండునట్లు నోరు మంచి మాటలనే భగవత్స్మరణనే సత్యవాక్కునే పలుకుచుండునట్లు సదా ప్రయత్నించవలెను. ఇట్టి జాగరూకతతో నుండిన చివరకు విజయము కలిగి తీరును. ఇట్టి పవిత్ర సంస్కారములు కలుగవలెననిన మనసున ఉత్కృష్ట భావనాసంచలనము తీవ్రంగా జరుగుచుండవలెను. చేతులు పవిత్ర కర్మలయందు నియుక్తములు కావలెను. లోపల ఈశ్వర స్మరణ, బయట స్వధర్మాచరణ, చేతితో సేవాకర్మ, మనసున వికర్మ, ఇవి నిత్య కార్యక్రమములు కావలను. సంస్కారముల ప్రవాహము ఒక దిశలోనే పారుచుండవలను. పర్వతములపై పడిన వర్షము అన్ని దిశలకును ప్రవహించినా దానివలన నది ఏర్పడదు. అట్లుకాక ఒక దిశకే ప్రవహించినచో దానివలన సెలయ్యరుగా, తరువాత ప్రవాహముగా, ప్రవాహము నదిగా, నది మహానదిగా విస్తరులుచు వెళ్లి వెళ్లి సముద్రమును చేరును. ఒకవైపుననే ప్రవహించు నీరు సముద్రము చేరును. నలువైపులకు ప్రవహించు నీరు ఏ కొంత దూరమో పోయి ఇంకిపోవును. సంస్కారము కూడా ఇట్టిదే. సంస్కారములు ఇటువచ్చుచు అటుపోవుచున్నచో ప్రయోజనమేమి? సంస్కారముల పవిత్ర వాహిని జీవితములో నిరంతరము పవిత్ర భావములతోనే ప్రవహించుచున్నచో చివరకు మరణము మహానందమునకు నిలయమనిపించును. ఎవడు ఇట్టి గమ్యమును చేరునో వాడు ధన్యుడు. రాతిమీద 20 సుత్తిదెబ్బలు కొట్టినను అది పగులక ఉండును. 21వ దెబ్బకు అది పగిలిపోవును. ముందు కొట్టిన 20 దెబ్బలు నిరర్థకమైనట్లా? కాదు. చివరి దెబ్బ యొక్క సఫలతకు వెనుకటి దెబ్బలన్నీ తోడ్పడినవి. ఇట్లే నిరంతరము లోపల బయట అనంత సృష్టి వ్యాపించి ఉన్నది. ఈ సృష్టిలో మనసు ఈ పోరాటము జరుపుచునేయున్నది. ఈ పోరాటము అన్ని సమయములందు జయమే కలుగునని చెప్పుటకు వీలులేదు. కాని నిరంతర సత్కర్మలను ఆచరించుచూ సదా ఈశ్వర ప్రేమతో నిండి ఆ ప్రేమ జీవితమందెల్లా వ్యాపించినప్పుడు మానవుడు కార్యాచరణయందు నిత్యానందమును పొందుచుండును. అప్పుడు చెడువృత్తులు ఎదుట నిలవలేవు. ఈశ్వరస్మరణ వలన సత్కర్మలు సహజరీతిగా అప్రయత్నముగా జరుగుచుండును. అట్టి తరుణమున ఏదో ఒక సత్కర్మ అను దెబ్బతోనే మనోనాశనమగును. అట్టి మనోనాశనమునకు నిరంతరము ఇట్టి సత్కర్మలనే దెబ్బలు వేయుచుండినా చివరి దెబ్బకు ఈ కర్మలన్నీ తోడ్పడి ముందు ఫలితమును ప్రసాదించును. ముందు చేసిన సత్కర్మలేవియూ నిరర్థకము కావు.
ఫర్ ఎ డ్రౌనింగ్ మ్యాన్ Even a reed is some support. So too, to a person struggling in the sea of samsara, a few good words spoken by someone might be of great help. No good deed can go waste. No bad deed too can escape its consequence. So, strive to avoid the slightest trace of evil activity. keep your eyes pure, fill your ears with the words of God and the stories of godly deeds, and as far as possible, do not allow them to listen to calumny. The tongue should strive to utter good, kind, and truthful words, and engage in remembrance of the Lord. Such constant effort will definitely grant you victory in the end. It is to earn these holy samskaras that one has to maintain the flow of noble thoughts and feelings in an uninterrupted manner. The hands should be used to perform good deeds, have the Lord's name within, and the practice of Swadharma without. With your hands busy with seva, your mind should be thus engaged in intended action. This should become the daily practice. The stream of samskaras should flow only in one direction. When the rains pour on the mountain peaks and the water hurries down the sides, no river emerges therefrom. However, when the waters flow in a single direction, first a brook, then a stream, later a torrent, and finally a flooded river is formed, and the rains thus reach the sea. Water that runs in one direction reaches the sea, while the water that flows in several directions gets dissipated and lost. Samskaras are also of this type. Of what use are they if they merely come and go, this way today and that way the next? The holy stream of good samskaras must flow full and steady along the fields of holy thoughts. Then death for such people becomes a great ocean of bliss. Worthy indeed is one who reaches such a goal. 20 hammer strokes might not succeed in breaking a stone. The 21st stroke might break it. But does this mean that the 20 blows given earlier were of no avail? No. Each of those 20 strokes contributed its share to the final success. The final result was the cumulative effect of all the 21. So too, the mind is engaged in a struggle with the world, both internal and external. Needless to say, success might not always be your lot, but man can attain everlasting bliss by getting immersed in good works and by saturating the mind with the love of God. Infuse every moment of life with that love. Then evil tendencies dare not hamper the path. Once man's mind dwells with the Lord, he will be drawn automatically only towards good deeds. When this happens, just one good deed one day could succeed in destroying the mind. To achieve this objective of the destruction of the mind, one has to be constantly engaged in good acts. For this triumph, all the good deeds done in the past have contributed. Each little thing counts, and no good deed is a waste.
So that is the fifth segment of chapter 16. And if you reflect on what Bhagwan has mentioned in this chapter, in this segment, Sai Prakash, the three ideas that come to me, which are sort of reiterated by Bhagwan here in various examples, is one is do good.
Yes, absolutely.
Do good. Second, do good continuously, consistently, relentlessly, without any distraction, without any diversion, without any doubt. And then finally, Swami says, how to do good? Think God. If you think God, you will automatically do good.
Yeah, and the purpose of all the goodness or doing good is to destroy the mind.
Destroy the mind, yes.
So that Swami says, if you are able to destroy the mind, that will lead to fulfillment.
Yes. I mean, If you tell someone that, you know, what you've got to do is destroy the mind, then probably he will not know what to do. He might get even intimidated with that whole idea. But here Swami is telling, you just keep doing good, you know. Mm. You never know, just that one good deed could lead to destroying your mind.
Destruction of the mind.
Yeah.
And he gives that beautiful analogy of how 20 strokes.
Yes.
So he says, you never know, the 21st stroke may actually break the stone.
Yes.
So if you keep doing good, that one good deed at the end may grant you.
Yes.
You know, there is that beautiful story of a devotee, you know, I think a thief of Lord Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a thief who is just on a tree and he's waiting because he heard some sound, but then as he is sitting there, he's just plucking the leaves and throwing it down. And there happened to be a Shivalinga below. And because he was offering the Bilwa leaves on Shivalinga on Shivaratri night, he had no idea.
Yes.
He was granted. So it is not by accident that such things happen. Possibly he had accumulated the
good karmas
over several lifetimes.
Yes.
But this is very interesting, because what is, I mean, when we just look at this whole thing, what is goodness, what is why we should do good, and then what is the mind, why should we destroy the mind? All these questions do come up. And you know, Swami starts off in a very interesting way. Before we get to that, just one thought which came is, he says, for a drowning man, even a small reed is a support. It gives him. So he says, always speak and help others.
Yes.
Speak a good word.
Yes.
That might be of help to somebody who is struggling in this sea of samsara.
Everybody out there is actually fighting a bigger battle than yours. Then you think you are fighting, actually.
Yeah, but it is very, you know, when I just read this first sentence, I was having, again, as always, a tangential thought. How do you know, how does anybody feel that they are actually suffering in this world? Like, for example, if somebody is well endowed with money, well endowed with health, well endowed with children, family and everything, will they ever feel that, oh my God, I'm suffering in this world?
But well, Sai Prakash, that is the fact of life, in the sense that even this morning, actually, I was talking about it on the radio on a different program on In Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. And there, I was reflecting on a news item that I saw recently, wherein the UK Prime Minister has announced a new ministry. It's a ministry for loneliness.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and that has happened very recently. And she's saying that that is the sad reality of the modern life today, that we have so many people who are feeling lonely, who are feeling lost, and the number is, out of 65 million people in UK, 9 million people are severely feeling emotionally isolated and lonely. And when I looked at the numbers in US, it was the number of people who are lonely has doubled since 1980s, and today nearly 45% of people above 45 are lonely in the US.
My God.
It's like a half of the older population. When people were in 40s, and one quarter of US they live as single. They feel lonely. Another half doesn't have a family. So, you know, there are a lot of issues there. But what I'm trying to tell you is, people are endowed, but that does not mean that, you know, they are happy. They are suffering in so many ways. You might have everything in the world, but still you are feeling lonely, you are feeling lost, you are suffering, you know. Yeah.
So what happens is, in a sense, it's not very nice to say it this way, but suffering and maybe even loneliness is a gift. In that sense, you start thinking and going deeper.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a different discussion.
That's a different discussion. But what I'm just saying is, like Swami used to say, you should welcome problems and, difficulties, because that keeps you, you know, wondering, that keeps you thinking, that keeps you going, inquiring and going deeper.
Yes.
And in this connection, Swami says, good company, for example, he says, satsangatve, nisangatvam, nisangatve, nirmohatvam. He says, when you join good company, when you're in good company, satsangatve, nisangatvam. So, nisangatvam is, you get detached.
Yes.
So, in good company, you get detached from the world. Nisangatve nirmohatvam. From detachment, means you are not illusioned. You are free from illusion.
Yes.
Nirmohatve nishchalatvam. Then you become steady.
Yes.
Your mind becomes steady. And then you are liberated. So, in a sense, what Swami is saying, you speak to others, speak good, and kind of give a good word.
Yes.
That is in a sense good company.
Yes.
So when you're actually you become the good company for somebody else.
Yes.
Or your words, your thoughts,
yes.
your this thing, that kind of takes them to a deeper level of understanding. That's what
yes.
I understood from that.
Yeah. In fact, when I think about good company, satsangatvam, yes, I mean, at the deeper level, it is company with sat, which is actually truly company with God,
correct.
With the higher self. Mm-hmm. But even at the normal level of understanding, satsangatvam, where we say find good friends and be in good company, I was thinking another way of looking at it also is, you don't look for good people, but you look for goodness in people.
Right.
I think that is easy to find.
Mm.
Might be difficult to find a person who really fits into your definition of if a good person, but probably you will find goodness everywhere, because there is some goodness in every person. In fact, the other day I was reading this interesting article which we had published many years ago in Heart to Heart. One Sai youth from New Zealand, he had written, he had just, come into Swami's fold, and he had read how Swami always says that you should speak softly, you should speak politely.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was in this company, internet company, and he was handling customer calls. And so used to get all kinds of responses, when you're in that position, there'll be some customers who are very agitated, some
right.
customers, who are frustrated and all that. So there was this woman whom everybody in his company knew that, this lady is very difficult to deal with, because she used to really shout and she used to be really abusive on the mm-hmm. phone. And so that day he happened to take her call, and, she was in her usual elements.
Mm.
And he heard her completely, and he tried to explain the company's point of view, and he tried to tell her how they are trying to solve her problem, and how much time it would take. And it's not as if the company didn't want to help her, but they were doing what they can, and it would take a little time and all that, but she was not willing to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was coming to a point where, he was also losing his cool, because, he had explained it so many times, and she's not understanding. She's not even willing to listen, actually. And then suddenly this thought came, no, Swami says, no, speak softly, speak lovingly, speak lovingly. He thought, okay. So he just put her on hold, and again he went to his colleagues and he told, how else can we solve her problem? And the colleagues told, that is the way. I mean, we are doing the best that can be done. She just has to understand.
Mm.
So again he takes the call, and then he explains to her with a lot of love, and now imagining that that love is pouring from his being to her.
My God.
And he does that again and again, and then he begins to tell her how there have been so many times when he also has faced that problem, and how he has been patient, and how it has got solved, and how sometimes these things take time, but how the company is going to a great extent to help. So he was trying to somehow convey to her that he can really, really empathize with her problem. And when this conversation went on for some time, then slowly he saw that her degree of the tone of her voice slowly reduced, and that pitch came down to normal pitch. And now she was speaking like a normal person, and you know, and then she said, she's uttering, I am so happy you're able to empathize with my problem. You understand. You also have gone through that same problem. So you're able to understand my problem. And so she came to that level. And then after that, it didn't stop there. She became so friendly with her. She started cracking jokes now on the phone. So he was saying that, you know, how just trying to, you know, connect with the goodness in that other person can change the situation. If you can always broadcast love, you can really change the situation. And he was telling another instance where there was this superior, not his superior, but, you know, superior of another department. And whenever this superior came in front of me, he would never smile. And, you know, he would always put a very morose and grumpy face. And this brother would smile and would never get a response. And you would wonder why it is like this, you know. So the second day, you know, also same thing happened. He's coming face to face and he smiles and the other person just looks away. And it happens the third time, it happens the fourth, I mean, fourth time. And he says, no, but I have to be at it, you know. I have to be at it. And so he continues to do that. So after 7-8 days, finally, the other person smiles.
My God.
But you need that patience, you know. You got to trust in the goodness of that other person. I think that's how, you know, we make the world a better place, one smile at a time.
No, absolutely. In fact, in a sense, that is also compassion.
Yes.
See, compassion is not that you are serving or you are helping somebody who is lesser privileged than you. Or it's just compassion towards everybody.
Yeah.
In fact, very beautifully, the great Russian author Fyodor Dostoevsky says, compassion is the most important, perhaps the sole law of human existence.
Wow.
So he says, yes. So compassion is, I mean, okay for animals, birds and other things as well, but even human beings, why should somebody be compassionate? Now, for example, Swami says, speak a good word, speak, be loving to somebody who is probably having suffering in this world, who is suffering in this, in a very nice, in a very, I would say, I think it's a discourse Swami gave to the office bearers of the Seva organization. Swami speaks about Seva and compassion there, and he says, suppose you go to the house of your friend, suppose your friend comes to your house, and very lovingly you call him and then you give him coffee. He says, when you go to his house, he'll also give you coffee.
Yes.
Or you go to visit somebody who is not well. When you are not well. So he says, you are not serving others.
Yeah.
Correct. You are not compassionate to others.
Yes.
You are compassionate to yourself.
Because you are actually going to get back everything.
You are going now, like the case of that person who, with so much patience, his patience quotient has gone up.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think after handling that lady on the phone,
he can handle any person.
He can handle anybody. So that is a plus point for him.
Yes.
So he says, so that element of compassion and is very interesting because initially, it feels as if you're doing it for somebody else, but eventually you realize it, you're doing it for yourself.
Yeah. I mean, seva, you're never doing for the other person. I mean, at the deeper level, yes, there is no other. And the other thing, you know, even the first line, which no good deed can go waste.
Correct.
I think I feel that was also something very interesting. Just like someone says, no bad deed too also can escape its consequence. Because I was reminded of this incident of Mr. T.G. Krishnamurti, you know, the initial days of when he came to Bhagwan way back in the 60s, mid-60s, before the inauguration of the Anandpur College, Swami had come to Anandpur and he was very new to Swami. He didn't believe at all in Swami, actually. He belonged to that Dravidian mindset, you know, sort of atheist and kind of, he wanted to, he was very well endowed and he wanted to have a rich, luxurious life. And his wife's family, his wife's sister, they had come to know Bhagwan, and Swami was actually coming to their house because his wife's sister, her husband was the district medical officer.
Okay.
And so Swami was coming to Anandpur, and so she told, you know, T.G. Krishnamurti sir's family also to come, and so they had to go because, you know, his father-in-law, mother-in-law also said, you better come. So he went there, and he was telling how he was least interested in Bhagwan or his visit. So he was actually playing cricket. Next to that house, there was a cricket ground. And he was playing cricket there with the youngsters there, and he told when, and they told, okay, you tell me whenever Baba comes, I'll come show my face. He was like that. So, you know, Swami came and they called him out, you please come. And in fact, his wife was taking kerchief and, you know, wiping all the sweat from his face. Please be presentable. But he was like not interested. Of course, it's a long story. But somehow when he sees Swami, he says, I don't know how involuntarily, you know, my hands fold, you know, in that pranam position. So I couldn't believe myself why I'm doing that. And, you know, he actually said, later he was trying to correct himself. How could you do that? You know, he's questioning himself. I never wanted to do this. You know, why did I put my head down? Who is this youngster? Because Swami was young, you know, in those days. So all that happens. And then someone tells him, you know, Baba now is in Anandpur and Swami might want to go to 2-3 places. Why don't we use your car? Because in those days itself, he had a Mercedes. So he says, okay, fine. Okay, fine. Because if you want, because, you know, family, they're all there. If Baba wants to use the car, fine, he can use. They said, no, you only have to drive it. He said, okay, why me? He said, no, nobody to drive, you only drive. He said, I don't know any place. Don't worry, we will tell you. Baba himself will tell you. There's no problem. You drive the car. So that is how, you know, he gets into that duty of driving Swami in Anandpur. And the second day, he says, but one thing that he noticed, you know, whatever he had seen one day of Swami, was every time Swami was stressing that, you know, do good. Swami was telling, help the poor, help the disadvantaged. And this was something like striking a chord in him. Because this is what his father also used to say. And he used to feel, okay, whatever this person may be, you know, but whatever he's saying is all right things. And so the next day, suddenly Swami comes down and Swami tells, let's go. And he says, where? Swami says, I will tell you, you go. And so he starts the car and they drive on and on and on outside the city limits of Anandpur. And he's wondering, where are we going? Because we have really crossed the municipal boundaries. Swami says, keep going, keep going. And Swami gives the directions and finally they stop under a banyan tree and there is a cobbler sitting there.
Yes.
You remember the story?
Yes.
The cobbler sitting there. And then Swami lowers the window and Swami tells the cobbler, I have come. See, I have come. And the cobbler now fully excited and the cobbler starts, you know, getting up and he wants to show the way. Swami says, let's go and to his home. And Swami then asked, Krishnamurti said, why Papam, he should walk? Let him also sit in the car. So he sits, so he makes the cobbler sit in the front seat. Swami is sitting as usual in the back seat. And then they drive into that colony. And T.G. Krishnamurti sir is like, you know, he has never ever visited a scheduled caste colony. It was a lower caste sort of. He cannot actually see the site of that locality because he was brought up in a very, very sort of affluent way. And here, I mean, his Mercedes going into that colony itself was all mud houses and everything. And then finally the car stops and the cobbler gets down and Swami gets down and that's the mud house and they go inside and the cobbler puts a straw mat down for Swami and his mat is torn and everything. And there, Swami very happily goes inside and, and T.G. Krishnamurti sir, he doesn't want to enter actually because it's like, where on earth have I come? He doesn't even like the smell of the place. He doesn't like anything of that place. And Swami does, come, you know, and so he has to go inside. And then that person says, Swami, what can I offer to you? Swami says, anything. Swami, can I give buttermilk? Swami says, okay, fine. And so he brings a tumbler, which has a lot of dents and black marks, and probably it has been used for decades. And he gives that buttermilk to Swami. And so Aunt T.G. Krishnamurti sir is thinking, oh my God, with what water he has made this buttermilk? What is he giving Swami? You know, what will happen? He is like terrified. And he just wants to run away from that place. And then Swami looks at that person, that cobbler, and says, give buttermilk to him also. And he's like, oh my God, the last thing I wanted. And he's really scared. He wonders what will happen to him. Maybe he will die. Maybe he will get loose motion. You know, he's like fully. And Swami says, no. Swami drinks it so happily. So he has no choice. So he also drinks. And then Swami sits there, blesses that family, talks to them and everything. Spends some 15-20 minutes there and then Swami gets back into the car and they drive back. And now this man, T.G. Krishnamurti sir, he has a million questions. He says, Swami, why do you have to drive all the way out of the city to go to this man's house?
Mm.
If you really wanted to meet him, you could have told someone, you could have brought him to, my sister's place. Why you have to really come all the way? And Swami says, do you know?
Mm.
In his previous birth, this cobbler, for 15 years, continuously, he walked every day 15 miles to visit that temple and light a lamp.
My God.
To offer his devotion to me. He did it diligently for 15 years without missing a single day. When he has done that for so many years, can't I do this once to go to his home? And TGK sir is like, oh my God.
Whom are we talking to?
And, that is one example of, no good deed can ever go waste. But at the same time, he asked Swami, then if he has done so much good, then why is it that, he is leading the life of a cobbler? Then he also asked Swami, there are so many people who have done good. Why you chose him?
Mm.
And then he says, the other good thing about him is, whenever he mends a shoe and people ask him, how much should I pay? He always says, God's wish.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is God's choice.
Mm.
He never asks people for the work that he has done. Whatever he receives it as God's gift.
Mm.
It is because of this quality of fully depending on me that I wanted to come personally to his house. But then he also asks, why is he still a cobbler? If he has, he has done so much good. But Swami says, because, again, that is the answer for no bad deed also can escape the consequence. Because Swami says, in his previous birth, though there was devotion, but there was not much discipline in his life.
Mm.
He used to drink, and he was into bad ways. He had a weakness for women, and all that was there.
Mm.
So, he has to face that consequence. So, that's why he's still a cobbler. But for all the good that he has done.
Compassion, Swami goes.
Yeah, Swami goes. I thought that was, a very beautiful way we can see. We can find any number of such instances from Swami's life.
Absolutely. In fact, when Swami comes, everything gets magnified.
Yes.
So, what you have done, 15 births, what you have done so many years.
Yes.
You get what you have done, one simple act, Swami does so much showers.
Yeah.
It's very interesting because Swami once told a set of some of the old devotees. He said, Prashant Nilayam is the holiest of places. When the avatar has come, you need not go for any Tirtha Yatra, you need not go to visit pilgrimage centers. You come to Prashant Nilayam, it's like visiting all the holy places of the world. And then he made a very interesting remark. He said, since this place is so holy, one act of punya, good deed that you do, it gets magnified thousandfold.
Wow.
In this place, if you do one act of merit, it gets magnified thousandfold. But you do one act of sin, that also gets magnified.
Oh my God. Both ways it works.
It's both ways.
How careful you should be.
You have to be very careful. Yes, you can be in any part of the world. You have to be careful and good in any part of the world. Yes. More so in Prashant Nilayam. And he says, what you think, what you do, what you speak, everything gets magnified. So...
Wow.
Now, it's the greatest boon to live here.
Yes.
And the greatest challenge. Challenge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
And another dimension to this whole thing about good company, for example, is like when you always speak lovingly, when you speak with compassion, and when you do good, automatically it rubs off. Like Swami says, Teja dut jana samsargam, bhaja sadhu samagamam, kuru punya ahoratram. Day and night keep doing good. Smara nitya anityatam. Keep thinking what is permanent, what is not permanent. There is that beautiful incident where the king Shivaji, he goes to meet Tukaram. Now, Sant Tukaram is talking about God, talking about life, talking about compassion, talking about goodness, devotion, love, everything. And There is this old Tukaram film from the 40s, I think, black and white one, very beautifully done.
Mm-hmm.
So, like how it happened to Tyagaraja, Shivaji sends his minister with all the jewels and you know, ornaments and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's Tukaram has gone out to the fields. And they're in abject poverty. I mean, they don't have any money. They're just very poor. And the wife and the children are saying, oh, for the first time, our husband has done something worthwhile. And in his holy name, we are getting so many riches. And they are like going gaga about it. They are testing out this silk robe and that ornament and this and that and this. And I'm so happy and very jubilant. And the minister is also standing and enjoying all this. And then Tukaram comes and he says, oh, what is all this? Very lovingly, very compassionately, he speaks to his wife and he tells, see, you don't need these ornaments to make you beautiful.
Hmm.
You are beautiful even without all this. You know, so let us put it back. It is not ours. We don't need all this. We have the Lord with us. What he did not know was Shivaji was hiding behind the bushes.
Oh.
He was actually standing and seeing whether Tukaram is really the kind of saint people are talking about.
Oh, wow.
So it was a test. Mm. And he knew that he is living in absolute poverty.
Mm.
And then he comes and offers. He says, I've never seen a saint like you, like a great Mahatma like you. And he says, from now onwards, I want to stay with you. I want to serve you. I give up my kingdom. I give up everything.
Oh, my God. Mm.
And then Tukaram says, very lovingly, come, I think you are tired, you need some water. He makes him sit comfortable. And then he explains to him, see, everybody has to do their duty. You do your duty, I am doing my duty. And he says, but I want to listen to one of your talks and all. He says, come. So in the evening when he's talking, the nearby tribal people, they get to know that Shivaji has come.
Hmm.
The king has come. And so they thought this is the best time to finish him off.
Oh my God.
It's the best time to finish him. So they come. And that is God's grace. Whereas Tukaram is praying to the Lord, they suddenly see so many Shivajis.
Oh.
They don't know who is Shivaji, who is not Shivaji.
Oh my God. Wow.
They see so many Shivajis. So they're coming to it and they think this is Shivaji, they go and hit that somebody else. The actual Shivaji, the original Shivaji is lost in bliss. So in the company of holy men, in the company of saints. So when you keep doing good, that is the best way to help others. And
Wow. I mean, the good multiplies. The good accumulates, the good multiplies.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
The good protects.
Yeah. And here, you know, Swami is saying, always see good, hear good, do good.
Yes.
Think about the Lord. Spend, you know, sanctify your senses, sanctify your life. And one very interesting point he says is, the hands should perform good deeds.
Mm.
Have the Lord's name within the practice of Swadharma without.
Mm.
Means do seva.
Yes.
The body should be constantly engaged in seva.
Paropakarartham idam shariram.
Exactly. And the mind should be dwelling on the Lord.
Mm.
And mind should thus be engaged in intended action.
Mm.
That I felt was very, very interesting.
Mm.
Because you know, it's comes with a with lot of control, in a sense. If you look at Swami, if you look at the way he used to move around, the way he used to come for darshan, the you know, he will look at you if he wants to.
Yes.
He knows exactly. It's not like our eyes going all over the place. It's not like, you know, okay, you see someone, hi, how are you? There's no one extra word.
Yes.
He speaks to whom he wants to. He looks at whom he wants to.
Yes. I mean, there is no even a slight gesture that is unintended.
Exactly. So that intended action is something which I think comes with a lot of control and lot of practice. And in fact,
lot of clarity also within yourself about.
And that leads to the next paragraph because he says, it is like scattering of all your sanskaras.
Hmm.
there's no point in scattering. He says if the rainwater is scattered in all directions from the hill, it will not form a river. So only when it all comes together, then it forms a river. So also, if the intentions of your actions are focused on one particular purpose, one purpose, and that is the destruction of the mind, then I think that leads to good samskaras.
In fact, I think many times we have good good intentions, but they should become good intended actions also.
right.
And then there should be not one, but there should be many like that.
Absolutely.
And they should be all be focused. I think that is what Bhagwan is telling here. Because I think sometimes we do good, but I think, you know, we do it randomly. We do it in a dissipated manner. You know, today we are in some mood, we do it. And, you know, after 1 week, some sudden josh, and then, you know, we'll go and do some little good of one random act of kindness, as they say. And then, you know, so, but we don't do it with a concerted, focused goal, as you said, destroying the mind.
No, but
even if you don't have that goal, but Swami is telling, be consistent in your goodness.
No, so one thing when we talk about service, I mean, this is something which people who have read Swami's discourses and heard him will automatically understand that, you know, when you say service or seva, it's not that you can go and serve somebody 24 hours a day. I mean, what about your job? What about your family you have to look after? But then it comes, the whole thing comes back to sanctifying action.
Yes.
So if you do that action as an offering to the Lord, if you do it without trying to own the fruits of the results of your action, and if you offer it to the Lord, I think that is the way of seva. That is the seva which Swami is talking about. And the next paragraph is a very interesting line where Swami says, it is not important that you should be victorious. Needless to say, success might not always be your lot. It's very interesting because, you know, how do you measure? So the measure of a successful, quote unquote, successful action is in this intention of doing it. I mean, with what intention you are doing that action, that is most important. And God sees only the intention.
In fact, this reminds me of an interesting anecdote. Apparently, this God appeared in the dream of one man and said that, you know, would you want to serve me? I have some work for you. This is definitely God. You tell me what it is. So God says, you know, there is this huge boulder. I want you to push it. Okay, so please, from tomorrow, do this service for me. Push that rock. Okay, so he says, definitely God, I will do it. and so, okay, you know the story, but I think let me say it because it's so appropriate here and for the benefit of listeners. And so he pushes the rock the next morning and the morning after that day and the morning after the day after. And every day he pushes and pushes and pushes and nothing happens. It's a huge rock. The rock does not move even an inch. And what also happens is Saturn comes now in his dream and says, what are you doing? You're wasting your life. You know, have you seen the rock is not even moving even a millimeter? Go and do something else. Don't put so much of effort, you know. Just do it namesake and go and do something else. Don't waste your time. And he says, but then, you know, he says, no, I told God that I will do this as my service. So he continues to do. He continues to push. And one day he gets tired and he prays to God, what is this? You know, nothing is happening. And finally God comes and he says, why are you so disturbed? He says, God, I have done everything that I can, put all my energy into it. It has not moved even an inch. And then God says, when did I tell you that it is supposed to move? I only told you to push. You know, he thought success is that the rock should move. That is not, in God's eye, that is not what is success. So God said, what I wanted is that you should push. That's all is what I asked you to do. Look at your muscles now. Look at your hand muscles. They have become strong.
Yes.
Look at your backbone. It has become sturdy. Look at your legs. They have become rugged. Look at your mind. It has become so determined. That is what I wanted. I never wanted that, you know, you should be pushing it.
Mm.
But anyway, now that you have pushed for so long, okay, tomorrow it will move. And you know, somebody gave a very beautiful definition of push. You know that, right? P-U-S-H.
Mm.
Pray until something happens.
Pray until something happens. Yeah, absolutely. So, again, coming back to this destruction of the mind.
Yes.
So, like, its mind is not like, you know, something which you can catch and then destroy. So, yes. What is the meaning of destruction of mind? I mean, it's a huge, huge topic.
Yes.
Which
yeah.
we cannot deal with. But, you know, today as I was just seeing stuff on the internet, we have the Google Doodle today about
yes.
on Virginia Woolf. She's a, you know, author, writer from the early 20th century. She's considered as one of the foremost modernists. And she writes, where the mind is biggest, the heart, the senses, magnanimity, charity, tolerance, kindness, and the rest of them scarcely have room to breathe.
Wow.
Very beautiful.
Mm.
So she says, so where the mind is biggest. So in a sense, it's very beautiful that by doing charity, by having tolerance, by, you know, having kindness, you are actually reducing the mind. You are not
yes.
giving the mind the
yes.
place to breathe.
Yes, yes.
So what do you mean by saying destroying the mind? Chitta Shuddhi, that's what Swami
yes.
says all
mm.
the time. Chitta Shuddhi is when the mind loses three of its attributes. This we have discussed
yes.
in detail in
but the
Shravanam Mananam series. He says, when it is clear of all the dirt,
yes.
think of it like a placid lake or like a mirror. So when the mirror is not having any dust settled on it, that is one type of impurity. When the mirror is steady and it's not shaking rapidly, that is another type of impurity that has to be removed. And the third is if a black cloth is not covered on the mirror.
Yes.
So, mala, vikshepa, avarna, these are the three. So, he says if you remove these three defects of the mind, then you see the reflection of yourself truly. So, what happens is in life, by doing these good actions and by doing constantly goodness means being
yes.
and thinking of the Lord all the time, what happens is your mind calms down.
Yes.
It does not reflect negativity. It does not make you think that the world is bad. You do not see
yes.
bad.
Yes.
You do not see, you know, wicked. You do not see
yes.
any, you see perfection. You see only love.
Yes.
And that is your true self.
In fact, you know, as here Bhagwan says that, once your mind dwells with the Lord, you will be drawn automatically towards good deeds.
Correct.
In fact, I was reminded of that incident from Ramayana, you know, mm-hmm. where Ravana goes to Sita when Sita is in the Ashokavana.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he tries in various ways to initially get Sita's attention, and then later when she's not interested, then, you know, he uses various means of ensuring that Sita agrees to his proposal, and Sita is always not interested, and then finally, you know, someone suggests to Ravana, you know, you are a Mayavi, you know, you and he has done that before also. You know, he has created a Maya head of Rama.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see Ravana, Rama's head is there on this platter. And, you know, Sita was terrified. And later, somebody else tells Sita that it's all Maya, so don't worry. So there is this advice that is given to Ravana that, you know, why don't you take the form of Rama, because you can take any form. So you take the form of Rama and go to Sita. You know, and then obviously Sita will just accept you.
Mm.
And he says, Ravana says, that is the main problem. See, if I take the form of Rama, the desire for Sita goes off.
Automatically
it goes off. And I think that is something very interesting, isn't it? Ravana says, if you think about Lord, automatically you will feel that goodness. automatically you will want to be calm. Automatically you will want to control your senses.
Mm.
Automatically you will not want to be angry.
In fact, talking of the mind, I think today is a day of quotes. this is a wonderful quote by Oscar Wilde, the notorious author who writes fantastic quotes.
Yeah.
He says, "Illusion is the first of all pleasures."
Mm.
So he says, "Illusion itself is the first of all pleasures." That's the mind.
Yes,
the mind which kind of shows you something differently.
Yes.
Something which is not the way it actually is.
Mm.
Or something which is kind of masking the reality.
Yes.
So he says, once that mind, obviously, once that mind is removed, then that is the purpose of...
Many times, you know, when Bhagwan also was talking about the mind, Swami used to say, "What is mind?" Swami used to say, "Mind is nothing but a bundle of desires." So, how do you diminish the mind? How do you mano layam, they say, right?
Mm.
How will that happen? Just reduce desire. So, as the desires reduce, slowly the mind also will lose its existence. But that is difficult, you know. But I think what Swami has mentioned here in this segment is sort of a simpler way of the profoundest thing that we have got to achieve in our life.
Mm.
And this is an easily understandable way, doable way.
Yes.
You know, just saying do good, that's all.
Correct.
Just do good. And I think this be good, see good, do good, this is the way to God. And that is the summum bonum of spirituality.
Absolutely. And very nicely Swami defined what is goodness.
Yes.
He says, anything that takes you closer to God is good.
Goodness.
That takes you away from God is bad.
Yes.
You know, when Swami, in the paragraph before, when Swami was talking about success is not everybody's lot. But what is important is the spirit with which you do. And tomorrow being Republic Day, you know, a wave of patriotic fervor.
Yes.
I am reminded of the life of Subhash Chandra Bose.
Oh, yeah. And we just celebrated his birthday 2 days ago. Jan 23rd was his birthday. Yes.
And Swami, you know, Swami loved him so much, loves him so much.
Yes.
And, you know, you won't believe one of those Independence Day dramas was on Subhash Chandra Bose.
Mm.
And Swami was so moved, and so, always so involved.
Yes.
And the next year, there was no drama. There was some other drama, but Swami was sitting there, and then in front, he saw the Bose speaker.
Oh.
The Bose speaker.
Speaker, yes.
And he said, "I want to speak."
Hmm.
And he said, "I saw the Bose speaker and I was reminded of Subhash Chandra Bose."
Yeah, and he gave a discourse.
He gave a discourse.
Yes.
So, you know, that kind of intrigued me into his life.
Mm.
Why is Bhagwan, why Bhagwan loves him so much?
Yes.
What did he do? And then you see his life.
Mm.
One of, you know, complete dedication to the freedom for his motherland.
Mm.
You know?
Yes.
But the effort that he put in, he was never discouraged.
Yes.
He never gave up.
Yes.
I mean, see his courage, see his determination. He left the country and went to Germany.
Yeah.
Who would have done that?
Yes.
He thought, if I side with Germans, one, because they are against the British, then my nation will get independence.
Yes. And he formed that army. I mean,
he went to Japan after that. Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yes.
And you see, so, you know, if you look at it from a very, very historical perspective point of view, his efforts were not, you can't say were the main reason. Obviously, they were a part of the reason India actually got independence.
Yes.
But everybody thinks of Gandhiji and how the independence actually came. But then that is not important for Bhagwan.
Yeah.
What Swami is looking at the tremendous amount of, you know, conviction and that concentration, the focus, that ekagrata that he had.
Yes.
That no, this is, I have to lead my life in this direction. And how many lives he has inspired, how many people he has inspired.
Yes.
You know, that kind of came to mind because he had no mind. It was just focused on one thing.
Yes.
That was freedom for his country.
I mean, and we, you know, such people, they just become ideas.
Exactly.
And these ideas survive generation after generation,
right,
even after that person is not there. And in fact, there is, since we are talking about this, there is also a theory which says that actually the British left India only because they were afraid of what Indians can do, because they had seen Subhash Chandra Bose.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's why,
yes,
you know, in a way it is...
Yes.
It is not told outside, but it's a very hidden...
Yes.
How he went from here to Russia and then from there to Germany, it's unbelievable. His life is unbelievable.
And of course, his life is a mystery, and there are so many theories about his life.
That's true.
Yeah. But I think this is very significant, what you mentioned. I mean, for if Bhagwan always used to be so much involved...
Absolutely.
Whenever he used to talk about freedom movement, and he would always bring up Subhash Chandra Bose, I think there is definitely so much that we have to study from his life and see what we can imbibe into our lives. And I think if his life was not one of goodness, that would not attract God.
Absolutely.
It is ultimately, we know and we have seen so many instances, what attracts God is only goodness, only that purity. And once you are you're in that zone where you are able to attract God, then, you know, then God becomes a part of you, then only goodness flows out of you.
Swami, in fact, says in that beautiful Telugu Kanda Kandantara, he says, goodness is in the soil of this country. He says, goodness is a part of our nature.
Absolutely.
And so, he says, that's why all avatars come in this land. Because to be good is natural for us.
Yes.
I'm not sure whether as many Indians are as affluent as the countries you mentioned in the beginning of this session.
Yes.
But how many Indians have this kind of loneliness? I'm not very sure.
Yeah, I couldn't get I couldn't get much statistics, actually. I don't know if anybody has done. Maybe in India it's not that much serious an epidemic as it is in the developed countries.
Exactly, because there is a sense of society. There's a sense of togetherness.
Family, society.
There's a sense of goodness.
And goodness, yes.
See, there that's, is, that is something which...
And there is this thing of, you know, God is with me.
Yes.
That feeling is always there in this land.
Right.
In fact, you know, since we are talking about this thing of motherland, and tomorrow is Republic Day, as you mentioned, since when someone asked Swami, why avatars take birth in India?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Swami said, see, if you have to mine gold, where will you go? You know, where will an engineer go?
Mm.
Where will a miner go if you have to mine gold? You'll go only there where there is gold. So that is the reason why avatars come to India, because there is, it is there in the soil. It might have been, you know, sort of covered with something else, with mud, but it is there in the soil. That's why avatars come here.
Mm.
And from here, it has to move. I mean, it has to percolate to all parts of the world. Yes.
Right.
So that's interesting. So wonderful. I think, Sai Prakash, we have to conclude the discussion because we are running out of time. It's already 9:33. Dear listeners, thank you so much for being with us. Of course, both of us, I think, enjoyed this session, and I hope you also found something interesting in this. Please do tell us what you feel about this program, and anything you know that occurred to you as you heard this discussion, anything that you would like to ask, anything that you would like us to discuss in the next session, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org with prayers to Bhagwan and offering our gratitude to him for enabling us this beautiful opportunity to dwell on his writings. We place this program at his lotus feet. Thank you so much, dear listeners. Sai Ram.